I'm Julia Sherbakov, and this is Impact Journey. Conversations with hidden heroes making big societal change.
I don't want to go back to the old world. I want a world where power doesn't just lie with those who have money. I want a world where philanthropy questions the system that produced the need for it in the first place. You know, even as economic hardship looms over so many people, the stock market is doing just fine. Those who are vulnerable are losing their incomes, health, and loved ones, while others are filling up their coffers. This is the consequence of an unjust world. I want a better world, a more just world.
Today, I am so happy to welcome Swati Chaudhry. About her impact, Swati is Managing Director of Synergos Advisory. Synergos is a global nonprofit that brings people together to solve complex problems of poverty. And Swati advises foundations, philanthropists, and companies around the world. Now, about her journey, Swati is one of those people where it is impossible to differentiate between who she is and what she does. Two big themes jump out in Swati's story that go all the way back to her own personal story, starting in Bihar, India. One is that of listening to different voices, and the other is that of seeing and fighting injustice, both of which she's been doing in her own life and now in her own work. So I hope you can also be inspired, as I was, from this conversation with Swati Chaudhry.
I would love to start with your influences growing up. You've had a fascinating upbringing as a third culture kid around the world. And what I'd love to hear is what you saw and learned and how you think that maybe informed where you ended up work-wise.
Yeah, you know, my story is really the story of my ancestors. I really like a storytelling style called omniscient perspective. I think Game of Thrones was told that, where you have many different protagonists in a story. So in my story, I'm not the only protagonist, especially the women who came before me in my family. I owe so much of what I do and how I think, what I value, to their stories. We come from a state called Bihar. It is the poorest state in India. Caste system is very prevalent. Gender roles are very prominently played out. When I visit my village with my mother still cannot leave the house without a male guardian. There has been a lot of push from people to navigate and change those rules, because breaking the rules has consequences. It's just anarchy. Like, someone will just push you in the pond and no one will ever know what happened to you. Or if you report it to the police, nothing will happen. So it's poverty meets anarchy and sometimes apathy. So it's just a really poor place, but very populous. We have the population of 100 million people just in Bihar state alone. And a lot of people who grow up poor face some sort of pressure to tell their stories in a deficit perspective. And for me, it's just an asset-based story, that there was so much love and so much community. And in that community, I would start with my great-grandmother, who raised sons that eventually stepped away from the patriarchy. My grandmother became the matriarch of the family, and she just instilled in all of us this gender equality sense. That I was raised like a boy. I ran around in the fields with my boy cousins. I climbed the trees. And then my mother is a formidable woman. She had an arranged marriage. My mother left my biological father when she was pregnant with me. And it was for a better life for me that she charted out a better life for herself.
Wow. And so what did she do?
She was one of the first to get a divorce. She fought tooth and nail for it. She remarried, which was very uncommon. And then she moved to the Philippines with my dad. a completely new place, a foreign country.
And how was life in the Philippines, living there, and but also making that change, and a big change?
Life in the Philippines was very privileged. We were expats. I went to a Filipino school for a year, and then I moved over to international school. Life there didn't compute for me. I had been this kid who took a bath once a week and was sick every winter. It turns out that's not normal, and that people take baths every day. And just the opulence. I went to school with movie stars' kids and diplomats' kids. I was this girl from the village, and suddenly my life has changed so much, not because I earned it. And the rest of my family didn't come along. And I think my life's work has just been to figure out that reality. How can so many different places like this exist and happen to the same people? It doesn't really have anything to do with hard work. And how do we make the playing field equal for more people?
And I'd love to hear that once you got to the US and into the working world, where you took those ideas and those ambitions, because you went into the private sector initially and then eventually ended up in philanthropy at Synergos, where you are now. But I'm curious, how does that journey play out?
You know, you're one day this village girl. Another day, you are an expat kid with a lot of privilege. The next time you really observe yourself, you're stepping off the plane in America and you're a person of color and you're an immigrant. And there's a huge difference between expats and immigrants. Expats are revered, and immigrants, at its best, immigration is a series of small humiliations. And being a person of color was something you really have to come into your own. That construct of race is very American and was very new to me. Ethnicity is something that we're really familiar with, and colorism in India and Philippines.
And caste.
Caste and religion and family name and gender, of course, but race was new. I felt that I was outside of this race construct, but America puts you in the race construct. I don't think of myself as Asian or other, but America does. And that took a little bit of coming into my own. So when I graduated from college, I was still an immigrant, a brown immigrant. And this was just after 9/11, where visa quotas were being slashed, and there's a lot of tension towards South Asian communities, Central Asian communities, Muslim Americans, Muslim immigrants. So amidst all that upheaval, your universe of jobs is actually very limited. So I went into private sector. These were the jobs that paid well and sponsored visas. The thing about having been poor is that you never want to be poor again. My big goal was to stand on my own two feet, like my grandmother, my mother, my ancestors would have wanted me to. And I had some great jobs. I worked in management consulting and investing, met a lot of really smart, brilliant people. And you know, that notion of it doesn't compute, the opulence was just another level. The dollars that we were financial modeling for were just astronomical.
Well, it's
zeros.
Like monopoly money at that point, right?
Exactly. And it just didn't compute that I'm in this world right now. What's happening? Why do certain groups of people make it and others get left behind? So I went back to school and I did public policy. It's a calling. I can't really help it. I didn't really want to take a pay cut and move into philanthropy or nonprofit, but at some point I had to respond to the call.
What was that shift like from the private sector into philanthropy?
Yeah, you know, Julia, I don't consider myself someone who works in philanthropy. I work in development. I serve the underserved, and philanthropy is where some of the funding and the channels come from. Even though my clients are in philanthropy, who pay the bills, that's not who I'm ultimately serving. I'm serving the clients of the clients.
And I'm curious how you chose Synergos, how you thought about, like you said, bringing in these observations that at this point you now made around the world of, I don't necessarily want to say unfairness, that
injustice.
That injustice, yes.
Synergos is a really high EQ place. There are a lot of people here who value sensitivity towards clients. I remember meeting some of the senior fellows at Synergos, and they were challenging what leadership looks and sounds and feels like. One of my favorite concepts at Synergos is challenging power. Within a system, we see power concentrated in particular pockets. We as Synergos, it's our responsibility to identify those pockets of power and challenge it. The other thing that we're really seeing in 2020, something that's not new to Synergos, which is surfacing unheard voices, not because they're not speaking up, but because we were not listening. And I'll give you a very tangible example. You know, in this digital world, there are webinars after webinars. You have these experts and that experts and this panel, but we don't really hear from those who we are serving directly, as if we didn't attune our ears to listen to them, as if when they speak up, we need an expert to validate what they're saying. So an example is we work in financial inclusion and we work with garment factory workers. And there are so many financial inclusion webinars right now, all very well curated, all with excellent experts. And you don't really see worker voices unless it's next to an expert. So something we're doing is figuring out in this very tricky environment how to surface those worker voices and how to hone the ears of the people who are serving them and making that connection to the digital world.
What you were saying in terms of listening, I was so struck on your public profile where you state your commitment, which is listening to the voices of the most vulnerable in our society, to have a commitment that's that specific. And then within that commitment, to have part of that commitment be listening, right? Like that's almost radical.
You know, listening is the most underrated form of communication. And I was not always the best listener. I've really had to work on it. I think when I started working in social justice, there are a lot of expert books. I think what I really needed to do was connect those dots with what my family members were saying, with people in Bihar who I knew, but I wasn't listening to them because they were like low class or my family, and you don't really listen to your family as much for academic or career data points. And what I really needed to do was open up my ears to listen to raw stories that were not packaged in a book, but they were so honest and were so full of richness.
Yeah, and it's so interesting, right? What I'm sure is a big part of your work, the individual striving to provide for their families. At the same time, I'm sure what Synergos is working on too is more structural changes, the norms and the systems underneath that. So I'm curious how you've played that between those worlds, the individual characters of people and then the systemic forces that they're operating under.
For seismic change, we have to do both at the same time, listen to the individuals and perspectives and strive for systemic change, policy change. The systemic policy and norms and behavior changes have to be informed by and led by the people who will experience them. One of the shortcomings of our societies anywhere have been that there's concentration of power that has excluded many people from being part of the institutions that make up our rules. Women have been excluded even from participating in educational institutions until two generations ago, let alone from being part of the body that makes decisions in these educational institutions, from government. And that's something that we really work towards, that we surface the voices, but not for nothing, to be part of the decision-making.
Clearly, it's long-term work. How do you go from listening, telling those stories, to bringing people into power and then in creating some of those structural changes that can then serve those communities, completing that circle?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well before my time, Synergos worked in Namibia, still does. We have an office there. There was a project on maternal health care where Synergos brought together several different units from different sectors. And it was the first time that some of the government folks did learning journeys to really understand what a day in life of an expecting mother looks like. until you see her waking up early in the morning, making food, then taking the bus, then waiting in the doctor's office, it's easy to overlook that experience when you come up with policies. So experiential data with push for policy change, with listening and collaboration is kind of a soupy mix that is hard to operate in and sometimes hard to explain. But that is where Synergos thrives.
And then coming to this moment now with the crisis in 2020 with COVID and the broader economic and racial justice crisis, back to looking at injustice and looking at voices that are not being heard. This could not be a more extreme example of that. So I'm also curious how the priorities of the work have also shifted, given that a lot of the things you were talking about, but maybe a lot of others weren't, but now are becoming really much more front and center.
Yeah, just have to take a moment for the moment that we're in. So the changes that we are seeking today are the changes that we're already overdue. Racial justice is not new. Gender justice is not new. Addressing climate change. And we just haven't been listening to them. And I personally experienced that. We were making recommendations to clients a few years ago that said, invest in people of color, invest in women of color. And these recommendations were rejected because philanthropy and the people in these decision-making tables were working in topic silos. I work in water. I work in education. But really, it's often enough the same communities that are facing a lot of the Human Development Index issues. So the same people are going back to the materials that we produced a few years ago. So now they're giving this new lens of let's invest in people, people first. But people first should have been the whole premise of philanthropy and our work in the first place. So there's a bit of a reckoning that we're coming to. It's not so much new information.
And I love what you're saying about investing in people, because it shouldn't be this revolutionary approach. And yet.
And this really calls for philanthropy to take longer term lens. We see a lot of what can you get me for a year? What can you get me for 2 years? And the short term view is counterproductive because you are serving communities that have suffered marginalization for hundreds of years and you think you can fix it in 2 years is a little bit too much credit to yourself. And this is the role of philanthropy, taking a longer term view, not just programmatic funding. And this is something that I'm becoming more and more passionate about. Restricted funding is hurting the field because a lot of organizations can't keep lights on or are cornered into making less optimal decisions because they don't have general operating support or long-term investment. I think it's lack of trust, because at the end of the day, what we say is trust us that we have a good partnership, trust us to spend it the right way. But this sort of dogma that nonprofits don't know how to spend their money is hurting the entire justice sector.
Just seeing your passion around that, the people focus, trusting and giving more unrestricted funding. Also in terms of what's needed right now, we're in a crisis, just a sense of urgency in terms of who needs that attention.
The most vulnerable in our society need our attention. Those who are most hurt today are the same people who have been the most vulnerable for a long time. If you look at the pattern of who is most severely affected by COVID, especially in America, you'll find disadvantaged communities, poor communities, brown and black communities who are suffering disproportionately and were always more vulnerable. So much of the inequality of COVID speaks to the inequality of our society. I don't want to go back to the old world. I want a world that is just and equitable. I want a world where power doesn't just lie with those who have money. I want a world where philanthropy questions the system that produced the need for it in the first place. A world where funders trust their partners more, where communities who have suffered for generations receive long-term and overdue investment. You know, even as economic hardship looms over so many people, the stock market is doing just fine. Those who are vulnerable are losing their incomes, health, and loved ones, while others are filling up their coffers. This is the consequence of an unjust world. I want a better world, a more just world.
I'd love to come full circle to your ancestors. Now looking back at the past, at your ancestors, and now looking forward into this great chasm of the unknown that we're all hurtling into. What keeps you going?
I think a sense of purpose keeps me going, because day to day, hour to hour, you're typing, you're doing the same tasks. So it's important to have that sense of purpose and to be in continual search of it.
How do you remind yourself of yours?
I turn to my ancestors to guide me in my purpose. I think of my great-grandmother and my two grandmothers, all three of whom I had the privilege of knowing. My grandmother especially, I will always remember her as larger than life, with her overflowing mind, big laugh, big heart, soft belly. I connect with my grandfather, who is perhaps now in his last days. I reflect on all that my ancestors poured into me, how they raised their girl children to have every opportunity in the world, to have self-confidence, autonomy, education, and most of all, a sense of casual incivility to question the world. Now I think about, what was all that for? What is the best use of all this investment over the course of generations? So I look to the stories of my ancestors, who are also the true protagonists in my own story, to light up the path to my purpose.
Thank you for bringing it back to stories, because that's actually the goal of this podcast, to feature what I call hidden heroes. So I do just want to thank you for taking this time to tell this part of your story.
It's been such a pleasure.
A big thanks to Swati. You can follow her work at synergos.org. This is Impact Journey. See you next time.